Hey everyone, and welcome to the final edition of the year for the Associate Affiliate Cricket Podcast. I'm joined as always by my co-host, Andrew Dixon. Hi Andrew.
Hi Ross, hi everybody.
We've got lots to talk about today as plenty of news and a few matches to preview, including the I-Cup final, which is finished. But we'll start with the match that immediately preceded that, which was Afghanistan versus Pakistan playing a T20 international. Afghanistan close, Andrew, but not quite in the end.
Yeah, that's a sort of fair summary of the game. They took it almost to the last ball. The last over sort of didn't go too well. Pakistan needed 6 from the last over, which obviously in 2020 is usually quite easy. But Afghanistan, the over was bowled by Daulat Zadran, who managed to bowl 2 bouncers, one of which was signalled wide and one of which was a no-ball, which isn't what you want to see in the last over. You're supposed to be bowling Yorkers and in the last over, and he it's hard to say he chokes. It's, 6 from the last over should be done every time, but it's unfortunately not the sort of over you want to bowl on the last ball of a 2020 match.
Yeah, they made a reasonable score though, 137. It's probably slightly below what they need, but it does at least show that they can make decent scores. I think most of the T20s they've played against full member teams so far, they've actually generally got bowled out for nowhere near enough. So this is a good improvement in that sense.
Yeah, and especially after being 7 for 2, they lost both openers quite cheaply, so they did well to come back from that. Najibullah Zadran scoring 38 and Mira Shashraf 28. So they did well, and it's good to see them compete better at 2020 against a full member. And hopefully they can carry on that when they play Bangladesh in the World 2020 next year.
Yeah, we should actually mention that. That seems to be under a slight cloud now. All of a sudden Bangladesh possibly might lose the hosting for that. Could make things interesting.
Yeah, there was an article saying that Pakistan are talking about pulling out because of the security situation in Bangladesh. And there was an article where the last paragraph said that 25% of the ICC's revenue is down to Pakistan and India playing in the, what they said was the first round. Obviously, it's technically the second round, but we all know it's really the first round. But that kind of sums up everything that's wrong with cricket, that you've so failed to promote the other team so much that 25% of your revenue is dependent on one match.
Yeah, so something to keep an eye on. Hopefully it will go ahead, but you wouldn't put past ICC to suddenly say they can only run an 8-team tournament or something ridiculous, which would be extremely disappointing. Good to see as well quite a bit of news coming out of Hong Kong trying to promote that they've been qualified, and they didn't get a lot of press on that, so hopefully they can leverage their position in that tournament over the next few months to get some coverage as well.
Yeah, and I know they're quite keen to get more attention on them from the Chinese community in Hong Kong. It's currently preserve of the expatriate and sort of descendant of expatriate community. So any movement they can do in that regard should be good, and it would be quite sensible of the Cricket Association over the border in China, in mainland China, to capitalise on this and try and do some promotion of their own.
Moving on, immediately following Afghanistan's match against Pakistan, they switched to the Intercontinental Consul Cup final. It was a fairly well-fought game. Ireland in the wind won relatively easily, but I think really until halfway through the fourth innings, it looked like it was going to be a very tight match.
Yeah, a very exciting match in many ways. A low scoring in the first innings, but much higher scoring in the second innings. Obviously, Ireland batted first and could only manage 187, but did well after being 67 for 5, and to make 187 it's a decent performance. With Anderson scoring 55, obviously a newcomer to the side, it's good to see him doing so well in multi-day cricket. Ireland then bowled very well to actually secure a first innings lead, which you wouldn't normally expect after scoring 187 against a team that bats like Afghanistan are capable of batting. They bowled Afghanistan out for 182. John Mooney bowled superbly throughout the entire match, in fact, taking 5 for 45, which is his first 5-wicket haul in first-class cricket. He, obviously, John Mooney was only in the team because of the withdrawal of Tim Murtagh for personal reasons just before the match. So, you know, he did very well coming into the team at short notice.
Yeah, a very good innings too from Ramit Shah at the end, the 86 not out. It was a late collapse. Mooney polished off the tail to finish the win. Ireland also did well. Trent Johnson's career has come to an end. He finished in the commentary box because he was unable to play on the final day. I think somewhat symbolic of his career that he was put everything into it until he was too injured to play on.
Yeah, it's you know, he's a fighter. That's, you know, it's you can't take that away from him, and you know, he's sorely missed for Ireland, and he's done well over his career, and he's sort of started playing for Ireland in 2004, but actually had been playing club cricket in Ireland since I think 1995. He started playing there very early on in his career, so it's not as if he just, you know, came into Ireland and strolled into the team. He played locally for a long time before he even thought about playing for the national side. So you can't question his commitment to Ireland. His son is now playing club cricket in Ireland at age group level. He's playing in under-11 cricket and recently won a Find a Fast Bowler competition in Leinster. And maybe the Johnson name will not disappear from Irish cricket anytime soon.
Yeah, of course, Trent himself won't be disappearing. He's taken up the role as the women's coach, so he'll be in Bangladesh as well, regardless.
I'm sure there'll be somebody in Cricket Ireland trying to persuade him to bring his bowling boots and just in case. But I think this, you know, I think this is the third time he's retired now, and I think this definitely is it now, and I don't think you'll be seeing him again in an Ireland shirt, but he's still going to be about and coaching, obviously the women's team. I think he'll also be continuing to coach the Leinster provincial team, and maybe he's a lot potential long-term successor to Phil Simmons.
Sticking with Ireland, they've announced that they'll be facing the West Indies in 2020 internationals and one day in February, as well as playing in the 50-over competition, domestic competition for the West Indies, so that's good news.
They've been looking for more matches against full members. It's the first one we've known about for 2014. Be interested to see what they announce for their home season. But good to play full members away as well. Hopefully the matches will be televised as well. We get to watch some of them, and playing in the domestic one-day competition of the West Indies could be seen as a step backwards after pulling out of England's domestic competition, but this is a different situation where your Ireland are able to pick their full strength side. You'd expect even all the county players to be playing in this tournament, so be good preparation for them for the season ahead. It'll be interesting to see if a relationship can be brought with the West Indies cricket board. Some people may remember about 10 years ago Kenya actually played in the West Indies four-day competition. If Ireland could arrange something like that, that would be even better than playing in the one-day competition.
Yeah, it's also, I think, symbolic that in the past we've seen Canada and the Netherlands playing over in the West Indies, so really as the regional team, Canada should be that team, and to have Ireland kind of assert that spot's probably a bit of a worry for them.
Yes, definitely. And USA were also apparently asked to take part in this tournament, but turned it down. And then the combined campuses and colleges team came back in. Everyone was a bit surprised that they weren't invited in the first place after being runners-up in the previous tournament. So USA pulled out. And obviously Ireland, it's probably a sign of their increasing respects that they get in the international cricket community.
Other tournaments that have been played recently, the Africa Women's Under-19 match tournament was played, as well as the senior tournament for 2020 cricket for women. And in the under-19s, Uganda won. They went undefeated in their 5 games over Tanzania. The other teams involved were Kenya, Rwanda, Botswana and Mozambique, which was, it's always good to see women's cricket, especially under-19 cricket, being played. The senior cricket was interesting. It was actually streamed live on the Tanzanian cricket website. It wasn't particularly well advertised that this was happening, but it was good to see a few overs that I managed to catch. South Africa was invited, but they sent essentially an emerging side, and they again went undefeated. They won quite easily over Uganda, became second, and then the hosts. Your thoughts on the tournament?
Certainly the senior women's tournament. The thing that stands out most is that the two teams that came bottom were Kenya and Namibia, with Uganda and Tanzania coming out ahead of them. Obviously, you'd expect Kenya and Namibia to finish higher after their a long-standing history in international cricket, certainly more than Uganda and Tanzania, and that's not happened, so that's very surprising, and a good sign for Ugandan and Tanzanian women's cricket in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Also being played, the Asian Cricket Council's Under-19 Challenge tournament was played. Singapore eventually was the winner of that, defeating Oman in the final, who we thought would probably the two teams that would be in the final, which is not surprising. I think it's good to see China do relatively well. They came claim third place in the end over the Maldives, but I think they got there about 2 a.m. the day before their first game, and they seem to improve throughout the tournament, so it's a good tournament for them. Very spin-heavy tournament by the sounds of it. Unfamiliar pitches, so probably a lot of benefit for the players involved.
I think we both expected that the final would be Singapore against Oman, so no real surprise there. China's performance is very hopeful for the future. It's probably their best performance at this level yet, and hopefully this is the generation of players that in, say, 10, 15 years' time will be making up the bulk of the Chinese national side, and hopefully they can get them to stick with the game. There's been a lot of reports recently of players just drifting out of the game once they leave university. I think the challenge will be to keep these players playing the game, and if they can and carry on their development, they can perhaps look to climb up the rankings in Asia.
Starting, I think, in the new year, will be the ACC Under-19 Cup. That all the heavy hitters are involved in this, India and Pakistan and Sri Lanka and Bangladesh, joined by Afghanistan, Nepal, UAE and Malaysia. Interesting to see how the associates go.
Yes, it certainly will. You sort of look at that, the Group B, which is Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Afghanistan, Malaysia, of being the best hope of an associate coming through to the semi-final. You'd perhaps back Afghanistan against Bangladesh. Maybe even Malaysia could push Bangladesh as well. It's only a few years ago that Malaysia beat Zimbabwe at under-19 level. Obviously, Zimbabwe aren't as strong as Bangladesh are, but who knows? Who knows what will happen? Malaysia could pull off a surprise there. The other group, we've got Nepal and UAE in the same group with India and Pakistan. You don't see one of those two teams challenging India and Pakistan, but obviously UAE on home soil, and you'd have to hope that they can maybe pull off a surprise. And Nepal, we all know their pedigree at under-19 level.
Yeah, definitely a tournament to watch, and good luck to those teams. The Sedara Cup was cancelled between Singapore and Malaysia.
Yes, Singapore pulled out on the evening before the game, saying that they didn't have enough players available. There's a statement about it on the Malaysia Cricket Association website, and reading between the lines, you get the feeling that Malaysia are very annoyed at Singapore. It seems that this isn't the first time they've pulled out of a tournament at the last minute, pulled out of a match against Malaysia at the last minute. So hopefully the match can be rescheduled as soon as possible, and it can be played. It's important that multi-day cricket outside the Intercontinental Cup continues to exist.
There's also some news coming out of the Asian Cricket Council in terms of their structure and new competition.
They're moving to a 3-division structure at under 16, under 19 and senior tournament. It's something I've been quite keen to see for a while. There's always been some mismatches at the sort of lower end of each tournament. So, you know, I think a three division structure is what's needed. Is the most interesting thing is that the top four teams from the one day competition will go on to the end, to a tournament at the end of 2014, where they'll play 2 day matches against each other. So you've got a situation where every other region is moving to a 2020 only model and cutting a lot of teams out of tournaments, whilst Asia is keeping every team still in tournaments and are expanding to not just include 50 over cricket, but 2 day cricket as well, which is a very positive sign.
Yeah, hopefully they can find a way to structure the 2 day competition to work within the limitations of 2 day formats, because obviously the only other 2 day match that goes around tends to be a draw. But yeah, definitely a good sign that they're playing multi-day cricket and keeping those things in. Getting to see a lot more annoyance of the other regions, particularly Europe, at the number of teams that have been excluded from competition.
Yeah, and you know, you look at the recent 2020 qualifier, you saw the four Asian teams have all gone through to the next stage, and you know, it's anybody who knows anything will tell you that you can't play 2020 cricket consistently well without a solid foundation in the longer forms of the game, be that 50 over cricket or multi day cricket. And you know, you see Asian teams as well doing well in the World Cricket League, and I think the two things are related. You know, the more 50 over cricket, more multi day cricket leads to more success at the in World Cricket League and in 2020 qualifiers. I think, you know, that's quite obvious what's going to happen, and I think the other regions need to take notice of this.
Yeah, one of the other things, of course, is that it does take an awfully long time to get relegated down the World Cricket League. It's quite easy to go up, or comparatively easy to go up, and so it will take a couple of years to notice if one region's consistently bad, but I think we are certainly seeing some disparity in performances between the regions, particularly the Americas, and that's got to worry the ICC. It should be worrying the ICC that's happening. Other news in Australia, Papua New Guinea did very well at the South Australian Cricket Association's T20 Cup, winning the entire thing against a fairly good opposition, really. Obviously, I think there are five South Australian teams in that competition and Northern Territory team, so a lot of state players were involved, and to win it all, showing that in 2020 at least, they've got very good pedigree.
Yeah, it was a very pleasant surprise to see them in the final. I know they played a 50-over tournament earlier in the year, and I don't think Papua New Guinea even won a game in that, so done very well in this 2020 tournament, getting to the final against Northern Territory. I suppose it doesn't say much for the strength of South Australian cricket when the best two teams aren't even from South Australia, but that's probably another story. And yeah, Papua New Guinea did very well, won the final, and a couple of their players have got rookie contracts in the Big Bash League.
Yeah, absolutely. And Carl Sandry as well was picked up by the Sydney Thunder and played the other night. A short three-ball innings, but he scored 9 runs in a couple of overs, including the wicket of Steve Smith. So good to see your associate players turning out.
Yeah, and he hit Brett Lee for 6 off his first ball, which is no mean feat.
World Cricket League 5 will roll around probably fairly soon after the new year. So there's some news from there. Jersey's got a new coach.
Yes, they've appointed Neil McRae, a former Scotland player who did assist Scotland at the World 2020 qualifier. That wasn't too much success. Has been mainly coach of Austria over the last few years, with whom he's had a lot of success. He took them from 23rd in Europe to 9th in Europe, you know, turning them into one of the sort of top 6 nations outside of the big 3 in Europe. And if he can do something similar with Jersey, you could well see Jersey challenging Denmark and Italy as one of the top teams outside those ODI status countries, and potentially even pushing towards towards Scotland, obviously Neil's old team.
They've also got some good news that the ICC unexpectedly reversed their decision and made Dean Morrison available for the World Cricket League 5.
Rare victory for common sense in international cricket. Dean Morrison has put in a lot to Jersey cricket over the years, and you've got a situation in Jersey where people do tend to spend a lot of time off the island, whether on holiday or working in England or whatnot. So it's I think you need to have a bit of common sense in this situation. It's good to see that the ICC have changed their mind and allowed Dean to play. They would have preferred to have had him last year in 2013, but so that wasn't to be. And yeah, they've it gives them a bit more confidence heading into Division 5.
Other squad news: the World Cup qualifiers will also roll around really soon. The squads have been released, as has the Scottish coach from his position, Peter Stendall.
I think the writing was on the wall for Peter Stendall after that performance in the World 2020 qualifier. As it has been for some time, he's got a record of... His record isn't brilliant, but it's hopefully a chance for Scotland to make a fresh start. I think to start with, I think Craig Wright and Paul Collingwood will take the reins for the World Cup qualifier, and they'll appoint a new coach and shortly after that tournament, and who can hopefully get them back up to where they feel they belong, which is one of the top associates.
Also in squad news, it was, I guess, a little bit of a surprise that Ashish Pagai wasn't in the Canadian squad.
Well, he was in the squad originally. In the original press release from the ICC, he was in the squad. And Cricket Canada announced last night that, first, that he wasn't available due to work commitments, and then that he had actually retired from international cricket, which is a big loss to Canada. He's probably their best player at the moment, and Jimmy Hansard will come in and captain the side now. And he's worried that Canada have been unable to keep hold of Ash.
And Steve Ticcolo, we wondered whether he'd stay on, and he was appointed interim coach, but he was named in the Kenyan squad, so he'll be around for one more, at least.
Yes, as will Thomas Adoyo. And we did criticise Kenya for picking him head of the World 2020 qualifier, but he did actually do quite well on a personal level, even if Kenny didn't do too well as a team. Hopefully, he can bow out on something of a high. Steve Ticcolo, he's a sort of player who deserves a good end to his career. He doesn't deserve to retire getting, bowled out for low scores or, hammered all around the park. He deserves to have a decent finale to his career, and hopefully he can get Kenya to at least keep their ODI status, if not qualify for the World Cup, but it's going to be quite a tough ask.
That's all the news. We thought we'd wrap up the end of the year with a little summary of some of our highlights. Let's, I guess, start with the best matches we saw this year. Yours, Andrew?
Earlier in the year you had the two Ireland-Pakistan ODIs. One finished on a tie on Duckworth Lewis, so the other as a quite a close game, a game I was had the pleasure of being at, where Ed Joyce scored a fantastic century. We've also got Ireland had another tie against the Netherlands in the World Cricket League. Very exciting match. The European 2020 qualifier, both semi-finals were good matches in their own right. Obviously in Denmark against Guernsey, you had that superb innings by Freddie Clocker, although Guernsey unfortunately didn't play too well. But the other semi-final between Jersey and Italy was very close. Jersey could have well have won that game and ended up going to the UAE, but it wasn't to be after their captain sort of choked in many ways. But I think my pick for match of the year would be that Hong Kong-Nepal match in the qualifying stage of the World 2020 qualifier, where it went right down to the last over. and Nepal managed to pull off a victory.
Certainly agree with all those. These are only matches we've seen, of course, but I should say that it was great this year that we probably saw two or three times as much cricket as we had in previous years in terms of the stream coverage.
Yeah, it's a very positive sign for the future that all this streaming has happened. And, you know, we should have mentioned the Intercontinental Cup final was, of course, streamed with David Townsend, the commentator, who did the entire game on his own. More commentary than some professional commentators doing an entire test series, and he did a great job. You're obviously in most test matches you'll see the commentators rotate every 15 or 20 minutes, and he did all 4 days of the match, and he did a superb job, as have most of the commentators throughout the year. Obviously we talked about the when the actual professionals do their stuff on the commentary, they don't do a good job, and these semi-professional commentators, we'll say, do an absolutely superb job, always very knowledgeable, and it's been a joy to watch throughout the year.
Absolutely. Player of the year, we can go a bit beyond the ICC's recommendations and cover, I guess, some of the smaller tournaments as well.
Yeah, one name that's stood out for me throughout the year has been Shaiman Anwar, who always seems to be in the mix with the high runs. He didn't do too well in the World 2020 qualifier, but obviously he scored a couple of centuries throughout the year, including one against India under 23. He's always been one of the names that stands out in match reports. Paris Kadka has had a good year again for Nepal. Matt Macon has played well for Scotland, scored a century in the World Cricket League and did reasonably well in the World 2020 qualifier, although you know, he was the best player in that Scotland team, which was otherwise poor. Similar to that, Colin Zabuya for Kenya has been a great player in a otherwise poor team. You have, from the sort of top two teams, Ireland and Afghanistan, you need to pick players from there. Samuel Ashenwari has bowled superbly throughout the year, especially in that World 2020 qualifier. He needs to cut down his appealing. I think if he does that at a higher level, he could find himself in serious trouble. But he is a very good bowler and can also bat a bit as well. But I think my pick for player of the year will be Ed Joyce. I saw him score a superb century against Pakistan earlier in the year, and he's been a constant important presence in Ireland's side. Although he missed the World 2020 qualifier, it says a lot that about the strength of Irish cricket that they didn't miss him too much. But obviously came back for that Intercontinental Cup final and played reasonably well, didn't score many runs, but to have a player like that in the side is great for Ireland. And there's many people saying recently that he's probably better than most of the England top order at the moment.
Yeah, hopefully the ICC eventually recognises that he's playing for Ireland on their ratings. He's, I think, 15 months without a flag at this point. So I think I'll probably add Kurram Khan to that. UAE had an outstanding year, and he's not past his best yet. He's still playing extremely well. And Paul Sterling, I think, at least in the World 2020 qualifiers, was very, very good.
Yeah, and also he played well in four-day cricket for Ireland this year as well. He scored a century in Ireland's match against Australia A, which was against actually what ended up being the ball in the sack for Australia in the early part of the Ashes series in England in the summer. So, Paul Sterling's had a very good year as well.
Team of the year, it's hard to go past Ireland, isn't it?
Yeah, winning, you know, three trophies in three formats has been a superb performance by them. It's not helped them get recognition in the Irish Sports Awards this year, which is run by RTE, the national broadcaster there, who have picked teams who have done their performances entirely domestically. So your Gaelic football and hurling champions, Irish Soccer League champions, and Ireland, who have won three international trophies in a single year, have been completely ignored. None of the players have been nominated for individual awards, or the team hasn't been nominated for the team award, and there's a a lot of frustration in Irish cricket about that, and RCE have come in for a lot of criticism. Apparently the actual award show was on TV last night and the cricket team didn't even get mentioned. Never mind actually not nominated, but they didn't even get mentioned, which is perhaps shows how far cricket has to go in Ireland. It's good to see that there's been a lot of anger about it, in a way, that RTE have come in for criticism for not picking Ireland.
I think, too, that reading between the lines on the RTE statement on that, there was a sense that because Ireland's performing at what's essentially the second tier, it doesn't count as much as some of the other things. And again, this is a problem for cricket. But I think if the Irish team came 10th in the world in another sport, that would be considered a very good achievement in most sports. But for them to come effectively 11th in the world and win everything but not know how good they are above them works against them at some level.
Yeah, that's a fair sort of comment from them, but still unfortunate that this is, I think, the only Ireland team that's actually succeeding on an international stage at the moment. And when you're coming against teams, you know, obviously Gaelic football is a big sport in Ireland, but outside of Ireland, not many people really pay close attention to it. And whereas cricket is a global sport with a global appeal, and Ireland's achievements are recognised perhaps more outside Ireland than within Ireland.
Are other teams worth mentioning?
Yeah, obviously UAE had a superb year. Very nearly qualified for the 50-over World Cup in the World Cricket League. They've qualified for the World 2020. They've still got the World Cup qualified to play, of course. Afghanistan, in mentioning, you know, obviously Ireland winners of all three tournaments in all three formats. Afghanistan were runners up in each of those occasions and pushed Ireland all the way. And you know, Afghanistan's rise has continued. They became an associate member of the ICC this year, of course, which gives them some extra funding. And you've got a situation now where Ireland, Afghanistan are so much better than the rest of them. It seems unfair that they don't get the opportunity to test themselves against the teams slightly above them a lot more. You know, look at, I think, 5-day matches between Ireland, Afghanistan and Zimbabwe and Bangladesh at the moment would be some of the best 5-day cricket you could play. And it's unfortunate that we don't get to see those matches. Another team, Nepal, have done very well. They seem to have turned a corner this year. They've gone from a team that had a tendency to choke. They were the South Africa of associate cricket in many ways. But this year they seem to have started to win those crunch, important, must-win games, which they haven't necessarily done in the past. They've come back from poor starts in terms. We saw that in World League Division 3. They had a poor start and then came back to get promoted from there. And they seem to have turned a corner this year. They've qualified for the World 2020, and it's a really positive sign for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And at where they were, it was cutthroat. They obviously just snuck through World Cricket League 3 and just snuck into the World 2020 secondary qualifying round. So to consistently get over those hurdles when it's all or nothing pretty much a lot of the time is very impressive.
Yeah, especially as they've had a record of not getting through those hurdles in the past.
We should mention a women's player of the year, which is somewhat difficult because there's not a huge amount of women's cricket played, and associate women's cricket is very sadly neglected. It's kind of the other of cricket, and that's somewhere it really needs to be improved on. But a few names spring to mind from the tournaments that were here. Claire Shillington played very well for Ireland.
Yeah, and scored a century for Ireland this year, which I think was the first for Ireland in women's cricket. So very good to see from her, and Ireland will play in the World 2020 in Bangladesh next year, well, maybe in Bangladesh. So be the first associate member to take part in the Women's World 2020, and Ireland women will also be playing Pakistan and South Africa in a tri-series in Qatar, of all places, in February, which will be a good test for Ireland ahead of that World 2020. Other players, it's hard to pick anybody. Obviously, Kim Garth had a good season as well. We don't really see enough women's cricket to be able to make a decent judgments on this, and as I say, it's a neglected part of Associate Cricket at the moment.
Yeah, I'd probably throw out Sonaren Tipok for Thailand, because to play very well to get them to the 2020 qualifiers for the women and then have quite a good tournament. They didn't do really well, but they did probably better than expected, I think. But yes, hopefully next year we'll see a bit more women's cricket, and it's certainly probably an area that the associate game should be focusing on more, because it's actually one of the easier areas to improve relative to full members, and again, a long way to go.
Yes, certainly. It is, as you say, an easier area to improve because if you're starting from a low point, you're going to improve quicker than if you're starting from a high point. So if some more attention can be put onto women's cricket, then all the better for the future.
That's pretty much it for the year, Andrew. Thank you very much. I'll see you in January as we get ready for Cup qualifiers. Have a good Christmas to you and to everyone listening.
Yes, and same from me. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to everybody.